Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Kevin!
You're stupid.
Friends, welcome to episode 489 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I guess this is the go-home show, if you will, prior to WrestleMania. This will be the last podcast, unless something catastrophic happens between now and WrestleMania. We'll do a special episode. But no, this is it, and Chad Smart joins once again. Chad, last week we talked about WrestleMania through the 90s and kind of looked at the trends of Hulk Hogan being there and then Hulk Hogan not being there. And you messaged me later or tweeted later about something we didn't talk about, and that was The Undertaker. And we kind of planted some Undertaker seeds, but never really developed it. And the streak really, in more ways than one, I think, back to what you had referenced with Sid, got going in the 90s, even though they weren't really acknowledging it yet. And we'll talk more about The Undertaker throughout this episode too.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, to look back, hindsight always being 2020. It's, you know, I don't think it was until WrestleMania 21, maybe, or 19, whichever one, we took on Flair is when they first brought up the fact that he was undefeated. And so that was when the streak officially became a thing.
Yeah.
So I think whoever booked the ending to the Giant Gonzalez match was crossing his lucky stars that he didn't ruin the streak.
Yeah, no kidding. And we'll get much more into the streak in just a little bit. We are going to talk about WrestleMania in the 2000s and actually take it all the way. I've got obviously the pay-per-view records up until WrestleMania 29, which was in 2013. It was the last WrestleMania before, of course, the WWE Network. And then now Peacock. And I don't know, what metric do they use now to gauge? I'm sure there's a way that they're monitoring that, but I didn't see anything, at least on the WrestleTalk website, where I got the numbers, the pay-per-view numbers specifically for.
Yeah, I think it's whatever numbers they want to throw out there. Mm. You know.
True marketing right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, last summer when the actors were on strike, part of their strike negotiations was they wanted better residuals for streaming platforms, but nobody releases streaming numbers. So I was waiting for that to come out, and the numbers didn't have to be released in part as part of their negotiation deals, and to find out how much people aren't watching and to see if they would were shooting themselves in the foot asking for more money when it would turn out to be less money. So I don't know how they measure. I know they talk about, they'll throw out occasional numbers and impressions on social media, but I don't know how they actually get the number.
Well, we are going to talk numbers. We're going to talk about, I was more fascinated with the 90s from the perspective of Hulk Hogan, because at the beginning, you know, WrestleMania was born under Hulkamania, you know, and it all kind of developed and grew under the Hulk Hogan headlining for the first 9 years. You know, he was a part of, he didn't rest. This is the funny thing too. I've been doing WrestleMania fun facts on YouTube and on my TikTok. And I had done one about Hulk Hogan. I said, Hulk Hogan has been a part of every main event for the first 9 WrestleManias. The key words being part of, I didn't say he wrestled in them. And I had a couple of people like, you know, call me out and say, well, he didn't wrestle in the main event of WrestleMania 4. And I, of course, couldn't not come back with something. And I'm like, I didn't say that he did. I said, go back and listen. And actually this video, this YouTube short, they're averaging about 400 views on YouTube. This one, the last time I looked, had almost 7,000 views. So I don't know if it's because people are trying to, but then there were other people defending me in the comments. So thank you to those who did actually listen to it. So I said all that to say, not just to promote the YouTube channel, but to say that, you know, Hulk Hogan, that big part of the first nine WrestleManias, he comes back here in the 2000s, and we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, Shawn Michaels always had the moniker of Mr. WrestleMania, but even he is gone at the first part of the 21st century as well. So that brings to me The Undertaker, who I feel like by default, regardless of who they call Mr. WrestleMania, really has the proven track record of being, what, 22 and 2?
21 and 2, yeah.
1 and 2, whatever his streak or his record ended up being, and of course has wrestled in more WrestleManias than anyone else. And in this time frame that we're talking from 2000 to 2013, he wrestled in every WrestleMania except for WrestleMania 16, or what we know better as WrestleMania 2000. So what are your impressions of The Undertaker as far as WrestleMania goes? I mean, he was top guy, really. I guess you could argue in the early, you know, against Jimmy Snuka back in 91. But after that, I feel like his opponents, even though they were throwing him guys like Giant Gonzalez and King Kong Bundy, he became that guy that was the guy to wrestle at WrestleMania. It almost became an attraction, like you said, after they acknowledged the streak.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, if you look at the early half of the streak, it is a little unimpressive given the caliber of talent that he was facing. But then once it became more of a focus, more of a, I would assume, and I have no knowledge of this, but I would think once the streak became a thing, it would become a more conscious effort to put him in there with someone that could conceivably break the streak or end the streak. Right. And yeah, I think, you know, his last 6-7 matches are probably some of the best in WrestleMania. Obviously, his matches with Shawn Michaels were up there. And even WrestleMania 17, when he fought Triple H for the first time, that, you know, was probably one of the top 2-3 matches on the show. So I don't know if it was just WrestleMania brought out the best in Taker, or again, you're putting him in there with people who are capable of having good matches. And it became, like you said, more of a attraction. So it became, you know, something other than just a standard match. So you had, we were talking about, you know, last episode about storyline. I think the storyline of the streak's opponents also became a bigger focus. And so you had more investment into the streak.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this before, but I'm curious, has your perspective changed? It's been 10 years, hard to believe. 10 years this year as we are in 2024, gearing up for WrestleMania 40. It was at WrestleMania 30 that the streak ended, 21-1, to Brock Lesnar. Of course, Brock Lesnar's name has been in the news lately. Again, he's not been charged with anything. He's seemingly been re-added to the company's website. So we're not here to put Brock Lesnar on trial by talking about him at all. But
I thought you were talking about his daughter.
What are your thoughts on Brock being first? What are your thoughts on the streak ending? And second, if not Brock, who should it have been, or should it have been no one?
I don't think it should have been Brock. And the main reason, and I'm sure I'm just repeating what others have said over the last 10 years, is Brock didn't need to end the streak. It did nothing to promote him more. And it was kind of anticlimactic. And I mean, I remember you and I were sitting there or standing there in the crowd and wasn't even paying attention, because at that point, didn't expect the streak to get broken, didn't expect Brock to break it. So figured he would, you know, hit a couple F5s and Taker would kick out and then do the thing. So I wasn't even paying attention to the match when it happened.
Yeah.
Looking back, I don't think it should have been Brock. You know, his other loss then came to Roman Reigns. Should Roman have been the one to end it? I mean, looking now at what they've done with Reigns, possibly, but I think at the time, no. because right. I think it would have been more of the perception of shoving Reigns down your throats, and we're going to make him the guy no matter what you think. Yeah. And was so I don't think the streak should have been broken, but if it was broken, I obviously think that someone like Gilbert, maybe.
Will you stop?
Stop. Yeah. I don't think it should have been broken.
I agree with you. I don't think it should have been broken either. And I kind of justified it back in 2014 when it did happen, as, they were working with Brock. And I do think, I kind of disagree with you a little bit on whether or not it helped him, because I think then that carried over into SummerSlam when he destroyed John Cena. And John Cena has gone on record in talking about that match at SummerSlam where he loses the title to Brock Lesnar about they went into that match with the mindset of the Undertaker streak was ended by this guy. He can't just come in here and get his ass whipped by me, so I'm going to let him have his way with me. And that's basically what happens in that match, if you remember. And so I like how Cena gets it and was playing. And I think between the streak ending and Cena's performance with Brock that year at SummerSlam, it helped build him into an even bigger, seemingly more unstoppable monster. But some of these previous WrestleManias that Brock was a part of, he got beat at 29 by Triple H. To me, that was kind of anticlimactic. And so, I don't know that Brock was the right guy. The only other person I could think to have made kind of sense, and I think The Undertaker recently said this in an interview too, was Bray Wyatt. And part of me is glad that it wasn't Bray Wyatt either, because his health issues, and then it seemed kind of start and stop with him. And you don't want to waste something as prestigious as the streak, I think, on something that you're not going to go all in on. And no pun intended. And I do think that they maximized Brock, and I think you're right about Roman. If they would have waited and had Roman do it that year, because that was the year I believe that WrestleMania that match closed the show, and Taker left his gear in the ring, the boots and the hat, and that kind of felt like it, but it ended up obviously not being it. So,
That was his last WrestleMania match, I believe. I believe that was his last WrestleMania match.
No, he had the Boneyard match with.
Oh, that's right. I don't count 36. It doesn't exist. It's all.
You think he gets back in the ring? Do you think we have seen the last of The Undertaker? I know he's.
Retired. I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. And not just because I don't want to see The Undertaker. It's wrestling. We've talked about this with Ric Flair before. It's like sometimes you just need to stop. And I think the last couple of years of Undertaker's career, even though he was wrestling less, he was on the downward slope. And again, you put him in there with someone like AJ Styles or someone who can be the ring general in a way. I'm sure you can get a good match out of him still, but it's got to end at some point. So he's had the perfect ride off into the sunset after the Boneyard match. So hopefully he'll, if he ever gets your inkling to come back, hopefully he'll bust out the Saudi Arabia match of DX versus the Brothers of Destruction, and that will put an end to thinking of coming back.
Get him away from that idea. So we're not going to break down all the numbers like we did in the 90s, I don't think. I say that and I'll probably end up still doing it. But I wanted to talk about and kind of compare and contrast some of these events and look at who was the top star, who was the main event. And by main event, I say closing the show, because I think it's sometime here in this time frame that they really kind of went more in with this concept of co-main events or more than one main event. Kevin Nash has argued that his match with The Undertaker, Diesel versus Undertaker, was the co-main event of WrestleMania 12. I guess that could be made. I mean, obviously most of the WrestleMania matches, especially once we get into the 2000s, are more high stakes or more competitive. It's not Coco Beware versus Rick Martel, for example, or you know, Jake the Snake Roberts versus George Wells. But in 2000, the year 2000, Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, at WrestleMania 15 in 1999, ends up beating The Rock for the championship. 800,000 buys. We talked about that last month or last week. A year later at WrestleMania 16, WrestleMania 2000, we're up slightly to 824,000 buys, but noticeably absent Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's off to have neck surgery. And we are also missing The Undertaker. The first time The Undertaker has missed a WrestleMania since 94. So WrestleMania is starting to feel different, I think, in this era. And this is where, you know, the war has pretty much ended, even though WCW is still around. It's not quite the same as it was. Triple H is the champion. He's a heel with Stephanie. We've got The Rock in there. We've got Mankind or Mick Foley and The Big Show. First time, I believe, that WrestleMania has main evented for a championship, has main evented in a multi-man match. And I want to get your thoughts on that. Was inserting, you know, because actually on a recent Grilling JR episode, Jim Ross said that he was, or might have been Bruce Pritchard, one of those guys, one of the Connie podcasts, had said that they thought the main event was going to be and could have been just Rock and Triple H. And then they added this garnish of Big Show and Mick Foley, and then a McMahon in every corner, and then coupling that off of this is 6 weeks after Foley's retirement. Here we go again talking about retirement matches. So what do you think? I remember, and I'll just preface this with this is 2000. My oldest kid was born in January of that year. I was working overnights at a TV station in Indiana. So the first half of 2000 is a blur. I didn't sleep much, and my consumption of wrestling was spotty at best. I was watching as much as I could, and I ended up watching this Mania later, but my interest, I guess I was kind of growing up and my interest was a bit waning, but I didn't really like the concept of a McMahon in every corner and the four-way, the fatal four-way concept either. What say you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. I want to say that in addition to the pay-per-view, they did something for like 6 hours prior to Mania. It was like a Mania recap or a Mania. Yeah. So I remember watching some of that, but I don't think I saw the pay-per-view live. I think I had to wait, and one of my friends recorded it, and then I got the VHS and watched it later, if I'm remembering correctly. So again, my memory is spotty at best because New Year's Eve of 99, 2000, I killed a bunch of brain cells that I don't think had regrown. And and so looking back at it, I think the McMahon in every corner was a bad omen of what we would see for the next 10, 15 years of, because Vince McMahon had become a character over the previous two and a half years and after the Montreal Screwjob. So getting the whole family involved, I don't know. And especially bringing Foley back and putting the Big Show in there who, I think a Rock Triple H main event, given their feud over the IC title, would have made more sense. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to have four corners and four McMahons, you got to have four wrestlers. So bring it up. But yeah, I don't, you know, and given that this was the first WrestleMania where a heel walked out as champ in Triple H, I think this was just a weird pay-per-view overall. And as you mentioned in a recent fun fact, this was there was only one singles match on the show, and that was a women's match that probably went about 90 seconds, if I recall.
Yeah.
It's
weird Mania for sure.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts though on, because I'm glad you brought it up, about Triple H walking out as champion? You know, traditionally this is, you know, 15 prior WrestleManias, you know, more than a third of those, more than half of those, Hulk Hogan was posing in the middle of the ring after the bell rang. And now we're in an era where the bad guy and his wife are walking out, you know, reigning supreme. I think a lot of people thought The Rock was going to win. I don't think anybody thought Foley or Big Show were going to walk out. So, and we're without Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, the company's top top draw at the time. It was just a weird, to me, again, a weird time. Triple H kind of felt like in those early days of his reign, when he beat Mick Foley after SummerSlam in 99, he just felt kind of shoehorned in, I guess. And it didn't, to me as a fan, it didn't feel, and again, this is going from when we were kids, you know, we're tweens and teenagers through the Hulkamania phase, and now we're young adults in the Stone Cold and Triple H era of wrestling. So yeah, it felt weird to me, and I don't know if it impacted. I guess it does. I mean, if you're watching and you're expecting, you know, a guy like The Rock to win, and then the bad guy gets his hand raised and walks out as champion because he got screwed over. Yeah, I could see where it would be off-putting, but this you know, this isn't the last time they go this route by any means. But I wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah, and you know, I would say it's also around this time too that the WrestleMania brand, the WWE brand, is becoming the bigger star. So you talk about turning people off. I think there was a lot of casual fans throughout the Attitude Era. And so I think that we're going to see that in the numbers for the next couple of years coming up. But I think even if The Rock had walked out as champ, you're looking at, especially when you look at 2001, when WCW goes out of business, ECW goes out of business, I think you're just going to look at a falling fan base either way. So I don't think WrestleMania itself had any effect that way, or had a meaningful effect, I should say. But it is something, and I don't know. I've often struggled with that concept of you have to sit.
We lost you there for a second.
Oh.
You don't have to send the fans home happy. Is that what
you don't were saying? Yeah, that philosophy of sending the fans home happy. Yeah, you don't want to not send them home happy every show. But like you said, if it became the de facto where only a face champion can walk out of Mania, that's going to get dull as well.
Right. Well, and it's interesting too, because now the next year for WrestleMania 17, this is what, a week or two after WWE buys WCW. And obviously, you know, we weren't going to get the big names, the Hall, the Nash, the Hogan, the Sting, the Flair, Goldberg. Those guys did not come with that transaction. None of them came with it. Some of them opted out of their contracts to go, but there were no, you know, I didn't know if there was going to be like a last ditch effort to throw together some WCW matches in there. Probably would have been too soon and too rushed, but this is the first WrestleMania with over 1 million buys. And so just over 1 million. And so I'm curious, were other fans thinking the same thing? Did they tune in because they thought maybe there's a chance that Hulk Hogan, you know, Hollywood Hogan's going to come out and confront Stone Cold Steve Austin or something along those lines. And many have said that WrestleMania 17 is the best WrestleMania of all time, or their favorite WrestleMania. It is definitely a star-studded show with Rock and Austin, you know, in their sequel from WrestleMania 15. But this time, Austin is the one who ends up turning heel at the end. So again, the heel walks out as the champ and ends the show with going into business with Vince McMahon, which I think was a bad move in that regard. But you know, and I don't know. I seem to remember like the WCW acquisition was kind of a last minute thing. Like they weren't, and I'm curious to know if the original plan was always to have Austin turn at WrestleMania, and then they just stayed the course with that after the WCW purchase, or if they decided to go that route and then try to give the other side some star power with, you know, when Austin, of course, joins the alliance. So,
yeah, I think I saw a video this week that mentioned WCW being at Mania, and that allegedly the WCW wrestlers that were there were supposed to get involved in the Shane Vince match, but Sean Stasiak had apparently let it leak that they were going to be involved. And so then they scrapped that plan. I don't know if I buy that. And like you said, the guy, other with the exception of DDP, they weren't bringing in, and Booker T, I guess, yeah, to be fair, they weren't bringing in the best and the boldest of WCW. So having Meat come back and do a run in, or Mike Sanders, like, it's not, it would have gone over probably even worse than the way WCW went over anyway. Yeah. And especially when you have a crowd that is there for WWE, which is, that's a whole nother discussion on why the invasion failed. But yeah, I just think that it's good theory. Did they know the lack of star power was going to be there, and so they needed to turn Austin? I don't know. I don't think that would have been in play at Mania. I think it was more of a shock, just a shock to have Austin side with McMahon. And I will say, this is something that is kind of missing in today's wrestling spectrum, is that you end the show on that cliffhanger. You make people want to tune into Raw to see, why did Austin turn, So it's, you got to drive the next show.
Yeah, that's a good point. I always thought that when Austin turned, he should have, and especially because he was going to be a part of the Alliance and WCW and ECW, and I don't think he could grow hair, but I think he should have gone back to stunning Steve Austin for that. I think it would have been, made him more hateable, but maybe not, I don't know. But I just think there are some guys that it's just impossible to boo. And even though it's happening a little bit now with The Rock, I still think people love The Rock. I mean, they're tuning in. Mm-hmm. Can't deny the numbers are up, and I think in part because of, probably a large part because of The Rock being back. So, but that's a whole nother discussion as well. It dips in 2018 in 2002 at WrestleMania 18. And this is the year that we get, now I'm drawing a blank on what's happening at this WrestleMania. It's
Triple H and Jericho in the main event, but this is The Rock, Hogan.
That's right. Yeah. And this brings up another, I don't want to say argument, another point, should WrestleMania, or should pay-per-views in general, this has been a discussion amongst many wrestling fans, should the pay-per-view end, or the PLE end, with the championship match? And does it hurt the show if it doesn't? I know coming up for AEW, they're going to be in St. Louis for their show in April.
Dynasty,
thank you. And there is talk right now that it's going to be Daniel Bryan and
Will Ospreay.
Thank you, God. Closing that show out. And of course, that leaves Samoa Joe as the champion not doing it. And again, a whole nother discussion, but would it have made more sense to close out 18 with Rock and Hogan, and some would argue Triple H was coming back and he's now in a little bit of power behind the scenes. Was he flexing that and using that? I think Jericho has said that they should not have followed Rock and Hogan. So
yeah.
What do you think? I think it would have made sense to close the show with that.
Yeah. I'm trying to recall the match lineup and trying to remember if there was a match between Rock, Hogan and Jericho, Triple H. Did they put a women's match there?
I think they do.
That's kind of a cooler, but I think if you're going to end with that title match, move Rock and Hogan earlier in the show.
Yeah.
And because it's there, but I would, again, hindsight, I think Hogan and Rock should have main evented the show, because you had, as we've said, the star of the first 9 WrestleManias making his return at WrestleMania against the biggest, or one of the biggest stars, at that time in the company. So it was a once in a generation match.
Yeah.
Which only happen once, not twice, like another once in a lifetime match. But so I think it should have ended, but I don't think anybody, given the lackluster response to the invasion angle, to the WCW guys, given Hogan's age, given, you know, internet reputation of Hogan, did they, you know, was it a certainty that Hogan was going to be cheered the way that he was?
Right.
And again, you can blame Canada because it's Canada, but I think the other factor is the Jericho Triple H match didn't have a good storyline because they neutered Jericho as champion. You know, he's going around picking up Stephanie's dog's droppings, and instead of being a fighting champion, he was, you know, so the match was more Triple H versus Stephanie's romance problems than the title.
Right. Yeah. Great point. And I looked, it was Jazz and Trish Stratus in between those two matches at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Austin though. You know, this is his match. He's at this one as well, but he's wrestling Scott Hall, who is, you know, back as part of the NWO. A month earlier, 2 months earlier, they come in and spray painted Austin, and instead of giving them or giving him Kevin Nash, he gets Scott Hall. Some have argued and stated that, you know, it was kind of a step down for Austin. I don't think anyone thought Austin was going to lose that match. I think Hogan and Austin would have been a great match, not a great match, but a, you know, on paper, I don't know that it would have gotten the same reaction though, that, that Rock and Hogan got. So, you know, we talked about Austin being the top guy, but in this instance, it feels like Rock was kind of, you know, anointed for this show. I couldn't imagine, you know, say back at WrestleMania 6 or, you know, I guess a Mania that Hogan's not the champion. Let's go with 7. He's not the champion. Would he have really stayed out? You know, to me, this would have been the equivalent of Austin coming in the end of the Triple H Jericho match and stunning them both and holding the belt up and drinking a beer. If we compare it to like Hogan when he was kind of down the card wrestling in that tag team match at WrestleMania 9. So again, I'm drawing all these weird quotes, but I wanted to talk about Austin because he felt like such a big part of the company. And by this time, and this is where I think he's starting to get disenchanted and takes his ball and goes home in just a couple of months too. So it all kind of made its way through and played its way out here, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, I would have thought that a match with Scott Hall, even though it's not a title match, it's still a big match. You're going up against, you know, it's not like they brought in Marcus Bagwell or Scott Norton, you know, the B team of the NWO. You're still going up. And I think a Scott Hall match would have been better than a Kevin Nash match. But I guess maybe it's just ego and, you know, perception, you know, if you start buying your own hype. And you mentioned that Austin would be leaving soon. And I think Austin too was also on the start of his downward spin because he would only, you know, the next Mania would be his last,
yeah,
I think, match. You only have so many slots. You can only have so many top people. And for me, I always compared during the Attitude Era, I said, Steve Austin is the Ric Flair to The Rock's Hulk Hogan. Because Austin was more of the technical, before his injury, when, you know, he was more of a technical wrestler who could go. And Rock was more of the showman, charisma, just, you know, didn't have to do as much to get over.
Yeah. Well, a year later, at WrestleMania 19, a big drop, almost 300,000 fewer people bought WrestleMania 19 in 2003. 560,000 buys. This is headlined by Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar,
who had his own big drop.
Yes, he did. That was scary. I want to know though, do you think now that, you know, we were talking about the WrestleMania brand selling, and I think though, selling out, you know, with the tickets, the you know, you're getting people to buy tickets, but then the pay-per-view, I think, still for people to plunk down 40 or 50 or 60 bucks on a pay-per-view, it needs to have solid matches and things that people want to see. Did people not want to see Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle? Because the numbers bounce back up for the rest. I mean, this is the lowest WrestleMania of that era at 560,000. And I don't know if that was a typo on the WrestleTalk page or if it really did drop that significantly, but it goes back up to over 800, almost to 900,000 the next year. So, you know, the other matches on that card at WrestleMania 19, that's where we see Rock and Austin for the third time and the final time. And I wonder if they knew, had they known back then that that was going to be it for Austin. I would like to think that more people would have tuned in and purchased that pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, because this was 2004, correct?
Three, 2003.
Yeah, I can't do math. I'm trying to think of what else was going on in the world at this time that would have maybe affected buy rates. Because I think, you know, Brock was the next big thing. This was his, you know, he was running dominant. Kurt Angle was a big star. But you're going with two new stars, basically. You know, we don't, and when you have Rock and Austin just in a match that, you know, and then
the bad Triple H Booker T story. I mean, that was
and then that may have turned people off because that was one of the worst stories of the modern era. So yeah, I don't know. Without doing more research, I couldn't tell you why that possibly dropped, but you know, and it could just be money issue and people not wanting to spend, like you said, $50 for a pay-per-view. I don't know.
Well, for the 20-year celebration, WrestleMania 20 in 2004, this was actually the first WrestleMania you and I, actually, I don't think you were there. We watched it at Travis Yates' house, our good buddy Travis, when I first moved to Southern. I was just new to the area. There were a handful of us that were wrestling fans, and I think you went to St. Louis to watch this one, or were you with us?
I don't recall. I don't remember. I know. So I think it was 17 that I know I went to St. Louis because I was when I had my car stolen the night before. Thank you, St. Louis. But yeah, I don't remember where I watched WrestleMania 20.
And you know, this one obviously big for a number of reasons. It's the 20-year anniversary. Austin is a part of it as far as the special guest referee for the Goldberg Lesnar match. Hogan's not there, though. Savage isn't there. Piper isn't there. Not that Savage was a part of the first WrestleMania, but really none of those callbacks. But Mr. WrestleMania himself, Shawn Michaels, is in the main event, taking on Triple H and Chris Benoit. Yes, I said his name. Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle had a hell of a match. The Undertaker and Kane hook up one more time. You know, I think Undertaker had been gone for a bit, and this is when he returns as the Dead Man. So yeah, it was, to me, this is where it started feeling like WrestleMania again. And I know that's probably weird, but I do think that some of those teen WrestleManias kind of, it didn't feel as WrestleMania-ish as it had felt before. And then obviously in the years that followed. So, but yeah, 20, I thought was good. Solid Madison Square Garden, one of the last arena shows for WrestleMania. Any thoughts on 20 before we move?
I think 20 is affected by the internet, because if the internet hadn't been around, if the majority of the crowd didn't know both Lesnar and Goldberg were done after that match, would it have been a different reaction?
Yeah,
you know. I think, you know, it's interesting because of the way the show ends with both Eddie and Chris having titles. That's something that I don't think any fan would have predicted would happen.
Right.
You know, because it seemed to be the start, or maybe not the start, but going in that less, in the direction of where talent over physique, you know, matters. So, yeah, you know, and it's, and I'm sure we'll to talk about this when we get to 25 too, but it seems kind of odd that the 20th anniversary, which technically is not the 20th anniversary, but the 20th show, like WWE didn't do anything to, you know, as a, you know, to throw back to the history of WrestleMania. And I don't know, maybe is that a good thing, or you know, should they rely on nostalgia that way, or should they just make the show itself, you know?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, bringing in Hogan, Piper, having a throwback to, or should the focus be on the guys that are going, you know, wrestle? And I mean, it's the debate we have now when guys come back into, you know, into WrestleMania season and they're only there for a few months and the focus seems to be taken away from the guys that have been there for the 50 weeks previous.
Well, I feel like, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this WrestleMania just happened to happen after the Mr. America run, and Piper was there with Sean O'Hare that mm-hmm. summer before. And I feel like they both kind of left under not the greatest of circumstances. And so I think there were some hurt feelings still. And I feel like that's why they weren't there, because this is also the year that they bring back the Hall of Fame. And to me, with the Hall of Fame, how do you not induct Hulk Hogan first? You know, I know he's not first, but this new rebrand of the Hall of Fame, how is Hulk Hogan not head of that first class? And then you in the next year, everybody's on the same page, and we get Hogan and Piper and Orndorff and Sheik and Volkoff and Cowboy Bob and Jimmy Hart in that class. And so I just feel like, yeah, there was probably something, and maybe it was petty. I don't know. I feel like something had happened, and so now as we're heading into, you know, with WrestleMania 20, and maybe that's where the throwback happens. We get some of those stars from yesteryear. Even though, just going through my memory real quick, Jesse Ventura and Tito Santana and Big John Studd, I think, and Heenan, of course, were probably the only ones that were involved in that first run. Oh, JYD and Greg Ballen. Okay, now they're all. So anyway, but yeah. So I think we started to get that nostalgic kick as well. And I think that for the Hall of Fame, you know, kind of another tangent here, but I feel like that's something that fans our age, especially, you know, in our late 40s, early 50s, that era of when we grew up, we're able to kind of relive a little bit of that and still enjoy those superstars coming back and shining in the spotlight. And so it'll be weird when, you know, we don't have those superstars that are still coming back for Mania, for a backstage segment, or for, you know, it's always kind of been that fun little kick throwback or whatever you want to call it. Nostalgia pop, I guess. But, you know,
hopefully someday Head Cheese will come back.
WrestleMania 21, the birth of John Cena. You know, we saw him wrestle at WrestleMania 20 against the Big Show. But
can you believe that he gave the Big Show the attitude adjustment?
I know.
I blew me away then, and the 2,000 times he did it afterwards.
Exactly. But John Cena becomes the man, I think maybe inadvertently, because his match with JBL is not the main event at WrestleMania. Instead, it's Batista versus Triple H. I think Batista could have had, or he had a great run. I don't think he had the same charisma as Cena, and he was a bit older. Not that that's a knock by any means, but it's interesting that they did close with, I think on paper, Triple H and Batista are better and bigger stars, or were at the time. JBL, to me, I just was not into his title reign at all, and I was just glad to see it finally come to an end. And you know, John Cena was still, to me, kind of proving himself, but I was much happier seeing him with the belt, and then, of course, eventually, really now becoming the face of the company for the next decade or more. So.
No, I agree with you. And I do think that Cena's, especially at that time, his appeal was more to a more broader audience than Batista was. But when you have Evolution imploding, that's going to be a bigger story than just JBL versus Cena. Right. Like you said, that pretty much kicked off the next 20 years of John Cena. So
yeah, really,
19 years.
Yeah. really at this point now, we've got, you know, Austin, the previous, you know, 2 years earlier, it's his last wrestling Mania, at least for many, many, many years. Undertaker is still around, you know, at 21. I believe it was Randy Orton that he beat with the streak. Shawn Michaels is back and active and facing top-notch talent. You know, he and Kurt Angle had a great match at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now that John Cena, a star is born, so to speak. And so I think it's good, though, that you have these utility players. You have Undertaker, who is the spectacle, the attraction of WrestleMania. And then you have guys like Shawn Michaels who can get in there and go. And then John Cena, who can kind of put that bow on it all and wrap things up.
And we kind of talked about it last week too, about, you know, riding the it's not coattails, but riding your star wrestlers until they're done, right, and not having someone ready to take the next step. And so, yeah, I think the, you know, WrestleMania's 19, 20, 21 are that kind of churning of new talent coming in, and not everyone, you know, hits and stays, but that, like you said, you have some of the older guard that is still there to carry the mid-card slack.
Absolutely. WrestleMania 22 is special to me. This is our first WrestleMania in person. It is in Chicago, Illinois, Allstate Arena, and I think this might be the last arena WrestleMania.
Yeah, they did 20, 21, 22 were New York, LA, Chicago, the top three markets. And then after that, they did the decree to only run football stadiums.
Okay.
Or stadiums.
That may be a WrestleMania fun fact coming up. Actually, it'll probably have already dropped by the time you're listening, recording a few days beforehand. Happy Easter, by the way, to everyone out there if you celebrate. But WrestleMania 22, another respectable number, 930,000 buys, headlined by Triple H and John Cena. And I don't know. I was nervous on this one. I thought that John Cena might have dropped the belt here. Batista's hurt, by the way. He's injured. He's out. We get that triple threat match, which, let me ask you this. You know, obviously Cena and Triple H are the bigger stars.
Yeah.
But again, let's go back to the story and the other title match, because this is where we have two titles once again. It's Randy Orton defending against, or I'm sorry, it's Kurt Angle defending against Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio, who won the Royal Rumble, in a triple threat match. Rey winning the Rumble in honor and memory of his friend Eddie Guerrero, who died previously in the fall. So storyline-wise, that's the bigger story. What do you think? Should that match have closed out the show? Because you definitely knew we were going to get that feel-good Mania moment.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking back to when you and I were working together and you came in, and this would have been like, I guess, the October before. And I'm like, hey, there's one guy we won't be seeing at WrestleMania. And you're like, who? And I'm like, Eddie Guerrero. That was too soon.
God.
But my personal opinion is no, we should not have gotten Rey Mysterio winning in the main event, because I did not like that storyline, because I felt it was too soon and was riding the emotional coattails of Eddie's passing and, you know, just becoming Bray, kind of becoming a tribute character, Chavo Guerrero becoming more of a Eddie cosplayer, if you will, after this. But I think Cena Triple H was the right way to go with the main event, because again, you have Cena, your new top star, Triple H, the guy who had been there, you know, that's more star power than Angle and Orton and Ray at that time.
Yeah. Undertaker beats Mark Henry, by the way, in a casket match. Probably one of, even though Mark Henry went on to become a great superstar and had a great run in several years later, I think this was another one. You knew Undertaker was going to go out on top with this one as well. So, a year later, WrestleMania 23, we are back in Detroit, site of WrestleMania 3. So 20 years later, they are back in Detroit. 1.1, almost 1.2 million buys for this one, headlined by John Cena and Shawn Michaels, Mr. WrestleMania. Undertaker wrestles the first time, putting the streak on the line against the championship. Batista is back and is the world heavyweight champion. And Taker, of course, keeps that. I thought that might have been when they were going to do it. If, mm-hmm. if the streak was going to end, that was probably the first time I really thought the streak is in jeopardy here.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would have bought Randy Orton ending the streak when they fought at 21 because of the whole Legend Killer gimmick that going on. But again, yeah, Batista. Yeah, we're getting into, like I said, matches that you think Taker's going to win, but maybe not laying down the money in Vegas on it.
Right, right. This is also, speaking of laying down money, the Battle of the Billionaires. It's Donald Trump in the corner of Bobby Lashley against Umaga, who has Vince McMahon in his corner, and they're going to shave someone's head. I still am blown away by the fact that, one, a future president of the United States was at WrestleMania, but probably even more shocking was the fact that Vince McMahon agreed to have his head shaved at that event. So that was a fun stipulation. Austin, of course, is the referee, and it's one of the attractions. You know, it was on the poster, and in addition to your two championship matches, that was the other match that a lot of people talked about.
Yeah, and it gave us Durag Vince in the weeks afterwards. So I think that's when he became ECW champion, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's an interesting stipulation. I mean, it was better than the Rosie O'Donnell, Donald Trump match that you and I got to witness in person.
Yeah.
a few weeks earlier than WrestleMania. But yeah, no. And I mean, we should point out this was Trump's third appearance at WrestleMania by this time.
No, fourth.
Fourth?
He was at 4, 5, and 20. And then at 23. Yeah,
I forgot 20
when Jesse Ventura kind of teased that Jesse was going to run for president. So
Okay. Let
me jump back real quick. I just thought of something else as we're talking here and we're talking about stipulations. You know, we get introduced to TLC, I believe, at WrestleMania 20. Or I'm sorry, WrestleMania 2000. Tag team wrestling had been kind of, especially in that, you know, the Attitude Era kind of ebb and flowed. And, you know, this was obviously a far, you know, the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian were a far cry from the Killer Bees and the Conquistadors and the Powers of Pain and those kinds of tag teams. So I think that match kind of helped, and that those three teams kind of helped reset tag team wrestling in WWE, which wasn't always the focus in the company, but I think those guys, and maybe it wasn't at 16. What was the show where Edge does the spear on Hardy on the ladder? Do you remember?
It's either 16 or did they?
I think they had a year later, or that maybe 1 year it was just
16 was not a TLC official match. Okay. It was named that afterwards, and I can't remember if they did it at SummerSlam or if it was the next year at Mania.
All right. Did it. Well, someone correct us in the comments and pardon us for being old and forgetful. Well,
and I'll segue off that talking stipulations. At WrestleMania 21, Money in the Bank is created and becomes a Mania fixture for the next, I don't know, 8-10 years, however many, but until the pay-per-view took over.
Yeah, and that's another one of those. You know, I feel like with stipulation matches, with Money in the Bank, with, I would even go as far as to say Hell in a Cell and Elimination Chamber. For me, Money in the Bank really, though, has kind of outrun its course. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it needs a change. It needs a reboot too, but
yeah.
WrestleMania 24, we are back, and this time we head to Orlando for what we pretty much know is going to be Ric Flair's last match. He's got the retirement stipulation up. To me, that was the draw for that WrestleMania. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that stipulation should have been going on for months leading into Mania, or do you think they could have got here a better way.
With the retirement? Because,
yeah, because I believe at Royal Rumble, he took on MVP. And at this point, it's if he whatever match he loses is his last match. You know, Vince McMahon has declared that once he loses, he's done.
Right.
So obviously, MVP is not going to send Flair into retirement. So does that, you know, talk kind of in line with Undertaker's streak, does the quality of opponent mm-hmm. affect the legacy of the storyline?
Yeah, no, I agree with you on in that regard. And I think even though they did it kind of because they put him in the Hall of Fame and they had the t-shirts and stuff, I really think that, and you know, a respectable one, just over a million buys on that one too. I think they could have made this Rick, you know, called it Ric Flair's last match, you know.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think Flair was keen on retiring at the time, obviously, because he came back and wrestled. But I think if they would have done this as a legit, this is it, win, lose, or draw, and then you could have done it where Flair still wins. I mean, I don't know that he needed to. Shawn Michaels beating him didn't do anything for Shawn because Shawn retired 2 years later. So would it have been better for not necessarily MVP, but someone that they were grooming, because we talk about passing that torch, you know, should John Cena have wrestled Flair and beaten him? You know, Cena, of course, though, was involved in the title match. It was a triple threat match with Orton and Triple H. I don't know. I don't know that either.
And jumping ahead several years from what you just said, you know, when we get to Kurt Angle's final match and Baron Corbin beats him, fans were not happy because at the time Corbin was not seen as being on the same level. So yeah, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Internet fans are never going to be happy anyway. So
true, very true. Yeah, you know, in hindsight now, talking about it 16 years later, or however long it's been, I feel like building it more, you know, even though I think you and I knew there was no way he was not going to win that, or that he was not going to lose that match.
Yeah.
He being Flair, I knew that that was going to be it. And that's, to me, that's what made it more special, was being there.
I mean, that's why we ended up going, because we wanted to be there for that.
Yeah. And then going that next night, for Raw, and we've talked about that before too, the celebration that they had. So I feel like with you know, as big of a star as Flair ended up becoming in WWE, and I know that there were some that said, you know, his first run, you know, he wasn't as well known, I think, you know, because he's admitted that too, even though he became the champion, I feel like that was all, that time period was even a bad time period in wrestling. But I think that he could have rode that wave and gone out, because as we're going to get to here in a minute too, Shawn Michaels at 26, that's his last match, and that's what closed the show. Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, and there was no title on the line there either. So this WrestleMania, though, it is Undertaker and Edge for the championship. Taker ends up winning that, of course. We get a run in from Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder as the Major Brothers. So anyway, I would have rather, if I had to pick between Edge and Undertaker or Flair and Shawn Michaels closing the show, I would have picked Flair and Shawn Michaels.
And yeah, I think that's a good call.
25, to me, of the Manias that we've been to, probably one of the bigger duds. 960,000 buys. This is in 2009 in Houston. I just did not feel, you know, like you said earlier, this is the 25 year anniversary. And it just, to me, it didn't feel like, I don't know. There was something.
Yeah. No, I've joked with you before that you and I put more thought into it being the 25th anniversary than WWE did when we were trying to come up with our cosplay for that year. And, you know, my feeling is, again, we went to 22 because we were both in Illinois and so was Mania.
Yeah.
We went to 24 to see Flair send off. And I remember at 24, when we checked in, they had tickets on sale for 25 for the people that were there.
Yeah.
You could buy the tickets. And our friends from Australia were like, hey, we got our tickets. Are you guys going? And I'm like, no, I don't. And then it was later on where we're like, yeah, it's the 25th anniversary. It's going to be a big deal. Let's go. And obviously Vince McMahon hates me, and it was not.
Yeah, Triple H and Randy Orton
close. Although we did get to see Ricky Steamboat, so I guess that's the trade-off.
Yes, yes. We get the match between Jericho, Chris Jericho, and Ricky Steamboat, Roddy Piper, and Jimmy Snuka. Trying to think of the other matches. You know, Undertaker and Shawn have their first Mania match. Mm-hmm. Many still say that that's the greatest Mania match of all time. I thought it was good. I like Shawn Michaels and I like The Undertaker, but mm-hmm. I don't think either one of them are in my top 10, probably not even in my top 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, I was really into the independent wrestling scene at this time, and that match is just the indie blueprint 101. Mm-hmm. A lot of finishers, kickouts, and something that we've seen become kind of the norm in pay-per-view or PLE matches. So
I'm trying to recall too, and I should have had these all pulled up and I didn't.
And don't forget the Divas Battle Royal the Kid Rock concert beforehand.
Yeah, I think the concert was longer than the actual
Royal. Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else, what was the other championship match that night?
Triple H and Orton?
Well, yeah, that was the
main event.
Yeah.
I thought you mentioned it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I don't know. The Hardy Boys fought.
The Hardy Boys did fight. Nancy Drew was not there. They should have had her as the special guest referee.
I mean, that should have been Lita's name when she came in, honestly.
Yes. I like that. It would have been John Cena. Was that the year that John Cena wrestled Big Show and Edge and he did the F5 through the...
Probably. I'm looking it up and it'd help if I actually looked up the correct WrestleMania.
I think it was Edge and...
That sounds right. Edge Let's and just Big call Show it that. John Cena defeated Big Show and Edge. And Mysterio beat JBL in 20 seconds to win in what was JBL's final match.
Yeah, I think you were in the bathroom or had gone to get a concession. Yep. And missed that one. I remember that.
Yep, I was very disappointed.
So WrestleMania 26, we talked about it. It's in Phoenix. This is, again, another bit of a dip at 885,000 buys for this one. Shawn Michaels and Undertaker close out the show. We get Chris Jericho and Edge for the championship. Or for one of the championships. The other championship was Batista and John Cena, I believe. I think that was a title match. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? You know, we got a rematch of Undertaker and Shawn, and now it's closing out the show. But there is a stake here. It's a stipulation of, I think Shawn leaving regardless, or was this a career versus career match? I can't remember.
It was a career match, I think, for Shawn. I have it pulled up, so I could probably tell you if I looked at it. Streak versus career.
Okay. Yeah. So if Undertaker lost, he would have just lost the streak, and Shawn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm here too.
Yes. I believe he and Vince McMahon are actually still fighting from this match because it went on for way too long. Given what the match was.
That one did.
I mean, honestly, for me, this is where after 25 was a letdown, I thought 26 was a letdown. And again, the reason why we decided to go to this one, because it was in Arizona. So you got to come out to LA for a few days and then we drove down to Phoenix, you know, it just seemed perfect. But again, the most memorable moment from my perspective after this is after the show is over.
Yeah.
We're on the concourse. There's two guys standing there, Chris Hero, Tyler Black. I say, hey, let's get a picture with Chris Hero. And you're like, you want to get a picture with Tyler Black? And I say, nope, he's never going anywhere higher than Ring of Honor.
And look at him now.
Look at him now. Main eventing two nights or co-main eventing two nights of WrestleMania.
Yes. For those who don't know, Tyler Black is Seth Rollins, of course.
Seth freaking Rollins.
Exactly. So what was the motivation for 27 then? Because we're in Atlanta, Rock is the host.
Yeah.
And here's WrestleMania, and this is where I'm going with this conversation. Mm-hmm. We're back up over a million, 1.1 million. Rock is the host.
Miz is the champ. This is the next time that a WrestleMania ends, or yeah, the next time that a WrestleMania ends with the heel leaving as champion, but Rock kind of gets the better of both Cena and the Miz.
Yeah. And it's interesting, if you read Brian Gerwitz, however you pronounce his last name, his book, he talks about how this was all set up to be a three-story arc with The Rock and Cena. Mm-hmm. But we did not know that at the time, obviously. The impetus for going to this one is our friend Travis, his wife, had contacted me and said, hey, can Travis come along with you? Because they were expecting their first kid at this time. She's like, this might be the last time he gets a chance. And I'm like, oh, we weren't really planning on going. And then I was like, oh, why not? It'd be a good trip out. And yeah, I mean, it was a memorable one. You know, we got to see Edge's last match. We got to see Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole, who I also think are still fighting at this moment from that match. Whoever decided to give them 15 minutes on a Mania should be shot. But yeah, other than that, you know, there wasn't, I mean, I guess The Undertaker and Triple H is really the only other.
This was the regular match, right? They weren't involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's what I was going to bring up as well. You know, we've established Cena, obviously, and we've got, you know, Undertaker still there, a big part of it. And then, you know, we're sprinkling Stone Cold Steve Austin in as the special guest referee. You know, he's the enforcer. This is also, I was going to say this is the year he went in the Hall of Fame, but that's not the case. This was the year Shawn Michaels went in the Hall of Fame. So Austin is still a part of it, coming back for those Mania moments and whatnot. And really then leading us to 28, and we're only going to go up to 29 with the pay-per-view. So I promise we're almost done talking about things going on for too long. But yeah, the next year we're 1.2 million. And this is once in a lifetime Rock versus Cena. And the first time that they square off, we're in Miami.
Yeah. And we went to this one because I am a Dolphins fan and I wanted to go to the Dolphins stadium. So, and I got a picture with Don Shula statue. So, and The Rock came back. So,
The Rock came back. Yes. We were able to see The Rock wrestle at a few WrestleManias. So, this one, though, to me, you know, it was what it was. And I'm trying to remember on this one, Rock and Cena closed out the show for this one too, and neither one of them was champion, right?
They were not champion. I'm trying to look up to see who.
You look that up. This is also, like we said, Undertaker and Triple H this time in a Hell in a Cell. This is another one where it seemed jeopardy because Shawn Michaels is the special guest referee. Is he going to screw over the Undertaker who made him retire? And I'm trying to really remember.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't know how we forgot it. This is the, you know, the opening match was a title match that went 18 seconds.
That's right. Sheamus and Daniel Bryan.
And then the other title match was CM Punk versus Chris Jericho.
Okay. I knew they wrestled at one of these. I couldn't remember if it was 28 or 29. Yes. And here's where, yeah, no, it really starts to feel like bringing in others and leaning back on those stars of the past. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sacrificing, you know. I mean, heck, we didn't remember the championship matches. I think if we sat here and thought long enough about it, it would have come back to us. But, you know, the Daniel Bryan match goes 18 seconds or whatever it was.
Which makes it memorable. And that's really, you know, if they would have had a lengthy match, would it have been?
Right.
You know,
right.
And would it have launched the Yes movement? I don't know.
It's an excellent point. Excellent point. WrestleMania 29, we're in New York. We attended this one as well. This is in 2013. Last WrestleMania of pay-per-view. Just over 1 million buys, and it's Rock Cena Part 2.
Class lawsuit.
Twice in a lifetime. But this one, it's for the championship. Rock has beaten CM Punk at the Royal Rumble. And I think this is what led to a lot of CM Punk's beef. Justifiably so, I think, in some regards, but also would this Mania have gotten over 1 million buys if it was Punk versus Cena? I don't know.
I don't know.
Needle mover. I mean, I know people, some people don't like to hear that or disagree with it, but to me, he's even at 52 or 51, he's making a difference. And it's funny, what's old is new, because you got Punk back, you got Rock here now. Cena, they've been teasing a comeback of sorts. So, but yeah, this WrestleMania is also, we mentioned it earlier, Brock Lesnar and Triple H. And again, I'm trying to think, this is the Shield's debut at WrestleMania, I believe.
Yeah, they took on
Sheamus, Big Show, and Randy Orton, I think.
Yes. Yes.
But again, the other championship match is escaping me. I think this is Daniel Bryan and Kane against Big E and Dolph Ziggler.
Yep. This is the debut of, I think, yeah, the debut of Fandango.
Oh, yeah. He beat Chris Jericho. Now, wait a second. Del Rio, Alberto Del Rio's got to be the champion, or the other champion here.
He defeated Jack Swagger.
Oh, God. Okay. Not, yeah. To me, the shine would be off.
And I remember you were upset because Mark Henry defeated your favorite wrestler.
Yes. Cry back. That was a big surprise to me. But I remember this being, because then the next night we were at Raw when Dolph captured Money in the Bank and beat Alberto Del Rio. But I was like, who did he wrestle? I would have sat here for 20 minutes and not guess.
Yeah. And I think that Raw the next night, to me, is the first real Raw after Mania
moment. Yeah.
Because that was the one where the fans hijacked the Sheamus Big Show match. I think it was Sheamus Big, you know, Sheamus Randy Orton match. It's one of the loudest pops I've ever heard is when Ziggler cashed in and won the title.
Absolutely. 100%. Well, anything else you want to add about WrestleMania in the 2000s? You know, we were, you know,
you're frozen in time.
I'm frozen. You're frozen. Someone's frozen.
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
Okay. So, you know, we start off the decade with Austin kind of being absent, Triple H rising up. And then through the years, Triple H is still a big player in all this. The Undertaker, of course, John Cena. And then as the decade closes out and we get into the early teens of the 2000 era, I think more focus on star power and not maybe necessarily so much on championships. It's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see with this year's WrestleMania, with, you know, by next week, we won't necessarily know who's won, but we are going to talk again more about WrestleMania and do some trivia and play some games and whatnot. But any other final thoughts before we wrap up this week's episode, Chad?
I like doing these deep dives and looking back in history just to see the, you know, what trends you can spot. And I think the biggest trend, and it was only a minor trend, is hopefully they got the lengthy announcer or non-wrestling matches out of their system, you know, with Vince and Brett and Lawler and Cole, you know, because I just did rewatch 34 through 39, with the exception of 36, which doesn't exist, as I mentioned earlier. And, you know, you have a couple of non-wrestling personas coming in and wrestling on them, and they're kept relatively short. But I also think, you know, we didn't talk about Snooki at 27, the celebrity matches coming in. I think the talent level that they're bringing in as special attractions also is increasing in the last few years. So, you know, it's not just a gimmick or, you know, an attraction. It's, you know, there's some actual respect maybe, or, you know, whatever.
I agree. It's not just a payday for them. Well, friends, we appreciate you listening and or watching this week's episode. We hope that you will join us for future episodes. And again, we'll talk more about WrestleMania next week and in the weeks to come. We appreciate it again. Thanks for watching and have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.